Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to today's Premier Foods Quarter One Trading Update conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you'll need to press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. I must advise you the conference is being recorded today. I'd like to hand the conference over to your speakers today, Gavin Derby and Alistair Murray. Please go ahead.
Good morning to you all. Thank you for your time. I know it's a very busy day. I'm joined here by Alistair Murray, our Chief Financial Officer. We are reviewing our trading results for the first quarter of our financial year to the 1st of July 2017. As you'll have seen at the headline level, we were 3.1% down in revenue for quarter one, with underlying that a very strong performance of Sweet Treats, close to 4% growth, but held back by lower sales in branded grocery, which I will come to. While at first sight, we've got some mixed results in here, Sweet Treats very strong, branded grocery weaker than some might have expected. I would stress, most importantly, that these numbers are entirely in line with what we expected for the first quarter. You will recall at our prelims in May, we indicated that quarter one would be weaker for all sorts of reasons we'll touch on in a minute, and that we would have a strong quarter two. We're very much in line with our plan and the way we guided hitherto. We also said we, at that point, continue to expect progress in the full year, and based on everything we've seen in the first quarter, I'm confident to reiterate that we will make sales and profit progress in the full year. Let's touch, first of all, on three points that really address why our branded grocery business, the weaker part of the picture, were negative. First of all, I hate talking about the weather, but those of us who went through June as citizens and enjoyed it will probably understand that gravy stocks and soups were not well helped as categories by the weather we saw in June. Secondly, things that we can control, and I'll come back to this with regard to Ambrosia. We have been recovering some particularly steep input costs, dairy in particular, which hit Ambrosia, and that had a big impact. We had extremely negative volumes and revenues for Ambrosia, I'll come back to. Thirdly, in some trade channels, non-retail trade channels outside the retail world, there are some year-on-year changes in investments, promotional investments, and indeed revenues, which account for a third part of that decline. I am keen, however, and I, for the first time, have put some Kantar data in the release, and indeed, I hope on our website now. The reason I did that is they help support the fact that we are doing very well in the market. We've quoted in the release that our sales are up 2.3%, and I'll come back to that later. We are outrunning for the second quarter running, and therefore for the first half of calendar 2017, significantly outrunning most of our, or if not most, maybe even all of our international food competitors, multinational peers. I think the fact that we're growing well in the market is one of the reasons why we are particularly confident about quarter two. The other reason is we are taking market share. We have Bisto, Batchelors, Loyd Grossman, Kipling, and Cadbury Cake all growing share strongly. Batchelors was the standout, and I'll come back to that as well. Going deeper into Batchelors, you'll know it is our third biggest brand. It has been in perennial decline at an average of 6% per annum for the last 3 years. This is significant revenue and value leakage from the company. The work that we have done to launch new products has Batchelors now in growth for the last two quarters, and we believe we've taken a significant scalp by recovering Premier's number one position as number one in the QMS category from a big global multinational food company. So Batchelor's success has pushed it back to number one in the category of QMS. The drivers there have been the launch of Super Noodle Pots, and you'll recall that we signed a strategic partnership agreement with Nissin some 12 months ago. That is feeding through. Nissin are supplying the noodles in the Super Noodle Pot launch, the Batchelor's products, and indeed manufacturing their factory in Hungary. We've listed now in four of the major retailers, only four, but we, at this point, as we roll it out, and we are selling at a high level and ahead of our plan in terms of Batchelor's Super Noodles. So Batchelor's doing very well. The next phase of Batchelor's product innovation is pasta and sauce. We're taking advantage here with all these pot launches of the very positive trend towards snacking and kind of informal eating. So Batchelor's doing very well. On the other side, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, Ambrosia was a big drag to our quarter one results. Half our branded volume shortfall against prior year and over a third of our revenue shortfall was due to Ambrosia. You will know very well that dairy costs, input costs have risen significantly. They're a key component of Ambrosia, custard, rice pudding. One of the ways that you will recall we have recovered our input costs is to reduce our promotional depth. I'll give you a specific example. Ambrosia cans, a typical promotion price would have been 50p over the last 3 years. We've raised with our retailer partners the promotional price to 60p. That's a big change. Some could see that as a 20% increase of our promotional price in the short term, and that has had a significant volume impact. So our volume in Ambrosia is, and revenue down in the mid-teens. However, sticker shock is something that is a temporary phenomenon. We can begin to see, we're already beginning to see that drag is lessening as consumers get used, frankly, to retail price inflation and new price points. And that's another reason why we are confident about quarter two. Elsewhere in desserts, Angel Delight. We don't spend much time talking about Angel Delight. Innovation has rolled through the portfolio. We launched Ready to Eat Pot, and they are going very well. Sweet Treats, nearly 4% revenue growth. I saw a major competitor numbers came out earlier this week. I think they had their bakery revenue as -1.5, so Premier +4. Cadbury Cake doing very well. Kipling in revenue growth, and we've launched some new gluten-free products as well. International up 20%, 11th successive quarter. I've been in both Australia and Canada in the last 5 or 6 weeks, and I'm very confident about the future, particularly a great momentum in Australia. Non-branded growth grew again. You'll remember most of that is driven by our cake business, where we've got a strong and profitable non-branded cake business, but also Knight and Foods is in our numbers nowadays. Knight and Foods is not a retail supplier predominantly, but you know they're growing quite strongly as well, and that is driving the grocery non-branded growth that you can see in the numbers. Nissin, I touched on the strategic partnership. We're going strength to strength with Nissin. They've supported noodles, Batchelor's noodles in the way I described. We've also launched their Sober product, which is doing very well. Both Batchelor's noodles and Sober Noodles doing growing significantly against and well ahead of their plans. Turning to costs, you'll recall we launched a cost efficiency program. The annualized savings of $10 million from SG&A are in the bag, and you know we have 50 less people in our head office as a result, and the final lever in the business, kind of left the business during April. So we now have a run rate of SG&A, which reflects those changes, painful though they were. Logistics, we've talked about very big savings, particularly next year. but some in the second half this year from our logistics consolidation. Our Tamworth site is now up and running. Volumes, we're gradually feeding volumes into that site, and in line with the plans, Tamworth is now delivering about a third of the group's total volume. So very much on track. That project runs all the way through to July next year, so it's still got some way to go, but very much on track for an enormous change in our logistical infrastructure. On the financing front, I think you know this, we completed the issue of the £210 million worth of bonds in the quarter. They were issued at the same coupon as the retiring bond, which we are pleased about. So in summary, we are spot on with where we expected to be after the first quarter. We always knew that in our plan, the first quarter was the toughest quarter. So we feel pleased that we have navigated our way through it on plan. We expect the second quarter to be stronger in sales, building on the market share momentum. We're getting pricing in the market, as I referenced with the Kantar data earlier. We're outgrowing our peers, particularly our food peers, and we believe the first half will be at least broadly flat to last year, and we're not uncomfortable with most of our analysts, I think, average projection of some revenue growth, some modest revenue growth in the full year. Cost efficiency, as I said, on plan. So our expectations, therefore, for the year are unchanged. And as a final point, I would remind you, as we said in May, that the financial progress in this year will be very, very much second half weighted. So with that, let's go back to the operator. And Sarah, could you open the call up to questions?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll now begin the question and answer session. As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Once again, that's star one to ask a question. The first question is from the line of Karine Elias. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. Just going back to Bachelors, so nice to see the sales still in positive territory there. I was wondering whether you can maybe comment a little bit of what you're seeing in terms of market share gains and how should we think about the balance of the year for that category, because obviously that was an underperforming category in the past. Secondly, just going back to Ambrosia, do you think it's reasonable to expect a full reversal or at least volumes to be flat towards the end of the year there as customers get more accustomed to the pricing there? And then just lastly, on the international, any particular plans that you've got in terms of adding more lines or more products in terms of international sales will be quite helpful. Thank you.
Karine, I've got the three questions, but the first one, the line was very bad. Was which category did you refer to there?
Bachelors.
Bachelors, okay. And the question on Bachelors, just to repeat.
I mean, obviously, it's been underperforming in the past, but it's nice to see it going back into positive territory. If you could share a little bit in terms of market share gains, is there more innovation lined up for the balance of the year? And trends we're seeing in Q1 to be indicative? Thank you.
Yes. Well, we are definitely growing share with Bachelors. I mean, it feels like in QMS, order of magnitude, our share's up about 2 share points. As you heard me say, we have recovered leadership of that category from a major international food multinational food company who've also announced their results today. And so Premier is back on top as number one in QMS because of the Bachelor's performance. There is definitely more to come. We're just launching a pasta product in pots, which if you go into Asda, you will see is on sale now, and we'll roll that through other supermarkets. And as we build production capacity in Hungary, we will begin to roll the Bachelor's super noodles that were already launched in February through other retailers. We're only selling in 4 retailers, which is because we're selling so well in those 4 retailers. We're not ready to take it anywhere else yet. Just about to launch in the 5th retailer, which is Morrison's this month. So no, we've got more to come on Bachelors in partnership with Nishin, and you should see that momentum run through the year. Ambrosia, Your point really is, are we confident that the kind of sticker shock, as I described it, will work its way through? We track this with every single promotion we've done at 60p rather than 50p, and we can begin to see, the numbers are still below where they were a year ago, but we can begin to see, that effect softening. I don't think Ambrosia will have the greatest year in its history because of that, but candidly, if you have the scale of dairy input costs that the whole industry is suffering, then you have absolutely no alternative but to recover them and protect yourself financially. And if the net result of it is we're slightly negative for Ambrosia in revenue for the year or volume for the year, then fine. That's it's what you do. We need to protect our bottom line. You understand? You go back to the strategy rebalance that we talked about in May, which is to be absolutely sure that everything we're doing is taking, is driving trading profit and taking cash through the business. And so, that kind of tweak to our strategy makes sure that we're not going to leave any input costs on the table, even if we sacrifice a bit of revenue. International up 20% and growing strongly. We are continuing to expand the listings of products within Australia, as I said, 4 or 5 weeks ago. And with both the two major retailers, Coles and Woolworths, we have and continue to expand the number of SKUs they've listed. And that's part of the reason why we're driving. We are now in Australia. We are the number one branded cake company in the last quarter, and that is from a standing start of about 2.5 years ago. So more to come in international. Very confident of where that business is going.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Arthur Reeves. Please go ahead.
Hello. Good morning, Gavin. Good morning, Alistair. Three questions for me, please. Can you quantify the pricing benefit you got in the quarter? And tell us how you expect the year to pan out on pricing. Secondly, could you explain a bit why you think retail sales, where you're clearly getting some growth, should be different from the sell-in, where your sales are down? And thirdly, could you comment a bit on how you're progressing with cash this year to date, please?
Alistair, why don't you do the first and the third, and I'll have a crack at Arthur's second question.
Yeah, good morning, Arthur. Look, I don't think we'd want to be too specific on pricing, but I think what we'd say is that where we've put pricing through, it's kind of low single digits, low to mid single digits would be, give you the sort of sense of where that is. And as you know, the vast majority of that was implemented really pretty much at the beginning of the year or going in on the early months. So that's really what the phasing of that looks like. In terms of cash, we are actually performing at the end of period three somewhat ahead of our budget. Obviously, as you know, you get fluctuations from a month-end date to a month-end date, but at the end of P3, we were actually somewhat ahead of where we expected to be.
Thank you.
And to your other question, Arthur, well, there are really two factors in here. One is the Kantar data, which I shared for the first time, is obviously only measuring retail. It doesn't measure wholesale, food service, and all sorts of other channels, which are nowhere near as strong. And so that's a key factor. The retail sales obviously are, I wouldn't say they're a leading indicator, but they're a kind of indicator of sales further through the process, which leads me to the second point, which is really trade inventories. We see less inventory in this quarter than we did last quarter. A good example, just an illustration of that, is cake and Easter. We shipped most of our seasonal cake to retailers in period four, this last period four, this year. And yet the Kantar data shows Easter cake sales out in quarter one. So you get the lead and the lag, in particular in that case, because of cake moving, Easter moving. Easter and cake are very big, as you know, Easter moving prior year from quarter three to this year, sorry, quarter four this year to quarter one. And so these inventory swings, for the kind of reasons I just described, explain the difference. And I think
it's worth saying as well that the shorter the period you look at, like a quarter, the more prone you are to these things moving apart. The longer the period you move across, of course, you'd expect them to sort of go together.
Okay.
Indeed, if we averaged the first 6 months of the year rather than the quarter, which takes out the Easter effect, for instance, our revenue would be plus 0.7 relative to the plus 2.3 at retail.
That kind of shows you
how the Easter effect affected trade inventory, etc.
Okay. Can I just ask one follow-up? Is there more pricing to come, or have we seen pricing for the year now?
I think there's a little bit more pricing to come, not a great deal, but some more to come. Particularly, I think most companies are finding dairy and butter. You'll know all about that. The actual numbers to be well ahead of their forecast. I mean, nobody really expected butter to be at whatever it is, 6,000 something or other a ton. And so there's a bit more to come, but we are very confident, as I said, at May that we will cover and recover through the three different ways we're doing it. Remember, price increases to retailers, changes in pack price configuration, and reductions in promotional depth. We're very confident we'll recover everything that's coming our way.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Martin Deboo. Please go ahead.
Yeah, morning everybody. It's Martin Deboo at Jefferies. It's just worth me saying I had the same question as Arthur on the difference between Kantar and reported, just so you know, that was also important for me, but I got your answer on that, so thank you. My question's less pertinent to the Q1, actually. It's just to keep track of the cost savings, really. Alistair, you probably don't want to give exact numbers, but what broadly is the mix of delivery of the 20 million, you know, when it's delivered between the logistics, between SG&A and between procurement? How should we think about the shape of that?
Pretty much half and half. And I think
there's three, Alistair. So I think there are three legs, isn't there? SG&A, procurement and logistics. So what's the half and half?
I think procurement savings is something which is ongoing, but of course that appears in cost of goods. I mean, in terms of the cost saving, the big cost savings initiatives that we announced a few months ago, basically the way to look at it is 10 million coming from SG&A savings, which we get this year because most of the sort of 50-odd people that left the business had left by the beginning of the financial year. And then the savings from the logistics consolidation, so moving to the new warehouse at Tamworth that Gavin was talking about earlier, although we've started the operation execution, those savings, that really represents pretty much the second 10 million, and that kicks in largely from the beginning of 18-19.
Okay. And on the SG&A, you said at Q4 that some of it was just getting rid of sort of senior people and you changed the organisational structure to facilitate that. But I suppose the concern will be, are you cutting into the sort of commercial fat of the organisation on the SG&A? I mean, how are you feeling about that? You're feeling the 50 people you said goodbye to, don't compromise your sort of marketplace effectiveness, or?
Well, it's a good question. I would say, first of all, of the 10 million, about 65% was people.
Yeah.
There were, you know, the other third was things you do to take out, other costs that are in SG&A that are not directly heads related. You would be right to say that this was bold. You know, I mean, Premier, you know Premier very well, is very lean. In the first place, so that's why you're asking the question. And 50 people, which included very senior people, three of my own direct reports, was a big number too. But you know, the way we approach things is we are doing fewer bigger things. I mean, the only way you can take heads out significantly on the basis that people working very hard to do a great job beforehand, is if you end up doing fewer things going forward. So that is a big mantra for us at the moment. Fewer, bigger, better. Fewer, bigger, better is the underpin of our budget. And Super Noodles, the launch of Bachelors and focusing all resources against Bachelors, is a great example of that. It's having much bigger impact than, you know, some, you know, two or three other initiatives that we might have taken in the past. So we are running lean. I'm absolutely not saying in my answer there are zero risks associated with it. But, you know, we've worked our way through it, and we did it with our eyes wide open, painful though it was. But more aggressive than most of our competitors, perhaps. But, you know, trying to get ahead of the curve and getting control of the kind of market, the market pressures that we're all under, and you will understand very well.
Okay, thanks for that, Gavin. Very candid. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Katie Hutchinson. Please go ahead.
Hi, Gavin. Hi, Alistair. I just have two questions this morning. You mentioned there your dairy costs for Ambrosia. Can you give an indication in terms of your pricing and hedging strategy for raw materials and commodities? And perhaps could you provide a little bit of colour on what categories this strategy is mainly focused on, or is it mainly desserts? And secondly, then, in terms of your overall strategy going forward regarding branded versus non-branded, grocery versus sweet treats, will certain segments receive more emphasis going forward, or do you forecast any changes in strategy with regard to promotions or new product development? Thank you.
Shall I take one on hedging and costs? Hi, Katie. So,
hi.
I mean, generally speaking, what we like to try and do where it is feasible and in a market where it's available is to try and put forward hedging in place. And that will be, it can be up to a year, but more typically it would be in the sort of six to nine month range is typically the kind of thing we'd look at. I think ultimately what that does is it gives you certainty and it kind of buys you time, is how I would look at those things. Our ability to do that depends on markets. Forward hedging in the dairy market is actually quite difficult, so that's one where we tend to run more exposure. In terms of other categories where it's perhaps easier would be things like energy, so sort of, you know, gas, electricity, diesel, all of those are more readily hedged. Oils and fats, sugar is probably a bit easier to hedge. So it depends a bit on a category-by-category basis. If you look at what we spend money on, I think probably dairy would be up there in the sort of top three or four categories, just to give a perspective on that, because obviously for the Ambrosia business out of Lisbon, it is the key input. And I guess, as Gavin mentioned, the other place that comes in is butter, which obviously is an ingredient into our cake business.
In terms of your second question, well, we look at it by category, as you know. Let's start with sweet treats. In sweet treats, we put a lot of resource and energy behind Kipling and Cadbury, but we're also very interested in a retailer brand business as well. We can make good profits in retailer brand. We're growing very fast there, but all our marketing and innovation will go behind the brands. Across in grocery, really probably our two lead categories. We're very much, as I said to Martin a minute ago, focused on doing fewer big things, firing big bullets, but less of them. So we'd be focusing disproportionately on the Oxo Bisto category and everything to do with Bachelors, you know, where we can get big growth. And we are clearly very much a branded company, and that's where the resources are going. And international, you know, it's all about brands.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Phil Bagley. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my questions. I've got a couple, please. The first one is, in terms of multi-buy promotions, you mentioned in the release that they were lower at the end of last year, and that seems to be coming back. Did that affect these numbers much, or is that more for the second quarter?
I think it's probably more for the second quarter. I think that comment's more made looking at what we know is in the plan and plan with retailers than something that, that really affected the first quarter.
Yeah, and we said, I think in the previous conversations, this was a 12-month phenomenon. Do you remember kind of starting, affecting the second half of last year and the first half of this? So the way I think about it, you know, we're in halfway through July. So we're kind of 9.5 months through the phenomena, 9.5 months through the phenomena of significantly reduced multi-buys. And as Alistair just said, but the encouraging thing is looking forward, we can see some evidence, not only just of the flattening out, which is what we expect for H2, and that's what we budgeted for H2, but we can see some signs, which we don't want to get ahead of ourselves on, of a tick up in multi-buys in one or two retailers who we are consistently pointing out have overplayed the reduction.
Thank you. And then as those promotions come back, what effect will that have on pricing? What confidence can we have that pricing will be able to remain at the sort of first quarter levels?
Well, the impact of it really is more on market size. You know, the big drag for the 12 months of this phenomena has been less volume in the market. You sell a lot less. The retailer sells a lot less for some of the reasons we described in the past. We end up having to spend more per unit, which also described in the past. So the logic of that is that as you cycle through it, you get to the end of the phenomena, to the end of this second quarter when we've cycled through 12 months of it. You know, the drag on volume, which it has driven, goes away.
Okay, but do you think market value will increase, though, or do you think consumers will buy more but for the same price? So that the overall market value will stay the same? So.
I think, if anything, you probably get a bit of market value benefit, probably, just because of the sheer effect of the volume.
Okay, thanks.
And I think one of the things to remember is that it's... you know, the other thing, the way you've got to look at this is if you've got a multi-buy promotion replacing a single unit promotion, your average price may not change that much. What does change is the volume it actually drives. So in that example, you would expect to see it driving an increase in market size.
Yeah, okay, thanks. And then finally on UK, normal UK temperature trends for the summer. I think I've experienced four seasons in the last 48 hours here. Is there anything sort of? How do we sort of monitor that?
Well, sort of look out the window, I guess. I think we are careful in this result. You know, we have given some observations on how we think the second quarter and the first half will pan out. We obviously make it clear, and we said it in a couple of places in the release, that kind of assumes average weather. We don't, you know, purport to be able to forecast with accuracy what the weather's going to do on a quarter-by-quarter basis. You know, I guess the only thing we could, you know, if you look at what happened last year, if you remember the thing that really affected Q2 was a warm period 6, September. So that will be something that we'll be watching with interest. In theory, that gives us an easier comparable because that was very weak. That was very weak last year, but if it's warm again in September, then the same thing happens. You know, I can't tell you at this point what we think it's going to do in September because we don't know.
Sure. Thanks.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, you can press *1 on your telephone keypad. The next question is from the line of Theo Lassart. Please go ahead.
Good morning. My first question is just in terms of gross margins. How should we be thinking about gross margins in Q2 and also for the full financial year?
I think we feel that gross margins in the first quarter landed where we expected. We obviously look at a number of things which can move them in the short term. That includes timing of input costs and the input costs are playing through in the way that we expected. And then equally in terms of pricing recovery, if you think about what Gavin mentioned earlier, was there was a little bit of pricing still to come in H2. That obviously then flows through into margin. Typically, it's a bit better in H2 anyway. because some of our higher margin products tend to sell a bit better, so we would tend to get a favorable mix variance anyway as we flow through into the second half. I mean, obviously we don't disclose margin per quarter, but that's the general pattern.
Okay, so should we be roughly thinking about margins being flat then for the full financial year, or is that a little bit too optimistic?
It's not something we give specific guidance on. I suspect that a lot of people would have a view that's not dissimilar to that, but we don't give specific guidance on that.
Okay, understood. And then just in terms of marketing spend, you know, given all this focus on different brands, I mean, how should we be thinking about overall marketing spend in the current financial year?
I think we should be thinking very much in line with last year. The only other thing I would add, which is new news to some of you perhaps, might be helpful, is that I looked recently at the advertising spend for the food industry in the UK for the first calendar quarter, January through March, which was minus 36%. So there's a very sick, food companies in the UK, driven by some very big multinational food companies, have reduced their advertising investment significantly in the our fourth quarter or the first calendar quarter. That is not surprising to me. I think while we have all moved through this kind of switch back from deflation to inflation, all the turbulence that is, which you all know very much about, it is not surprising to me that a lot of people are holding back on marketing investments. So they reduced their the industry reduced their spend by a third. I've also looked at the numbers for the five premier categories, and the numbers are similar. So we'll be flat with prior year. We're seeing some very significant reductions in the market in terms of advertising, and anybody who talks to advertising agencies will be hearing that a very painful message from them from that regard.
So I should be thinking about roughly 30, 35 million per year.
Yep.
Is that accurate? Yeah.
Yeah, probably nearer 30 than 35.
Yep.
Okay, and then finally, in terms of CapEx, given all the changes we've seen in the UK market, how should we be thinking about CapEx this year?
I think the guidance we've given is kind of low 20s.
Low 20s, okay.
I think it's 2022, something like that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And there are no further questions at this time, so I'll hand the conference back to you.
Excellent. Thank you. I know it's a very busy day for you all. Thanks for your very, very large numbers of people on the call. Thank you for your time and attendance. And as you can tell, we're feeling challenging environment, but Premier's outrunning our peers, growing share, and we're very much in line with the shape of our plan for the year. Thank you very much and have a good day.
Thank you. That does conclude the conference for today. Thank you for participating, and you may now disconnect.